I'm David Schreiner Kahn, and this is Smashing the Plateau. No matter how successful you are, there's probably at least one area where roadblocks are keeping you from fully achieving your goals. Fortunately, you've come to the right place. Every expert I interview on this podcast is different, but they all have one thing in common. They know how to fix problems that keep people stuck. Today, I'm pleased to welcome Tracy Dennis. Tracy is the creator of Personal Zen, a mobile and tablet app. Tracy is also a professor of psychology and neuroscience at Hunter College and the City University of New York. Her research examines the anxious brain, how negative habits of thinking and attention fuel anxiety, and how these habits can be transformed through cognitive retraining. Tracy, welcome to the show.
Thank you, David. It's a pleasure to speak with you.
So tell us a little bit about your background, and in particular, how you combine being a professor with creating an app.
Well, my background is a rather long and twisty road, and I actually started out as a professional musician in training. I played the oboe of all things. But I always have believed that that classical training actually prepared me to then pursue a clinical psychology degree and further training in neuroscience. So I am a big proponent of music education. But what happened is while I was at conservatory, I was studying at the Eastman School of Music, I started working with kids who had experienced a lot of adversity in their life. And these kids, despite some really, in some cases, some horrendous experiences that broke your heart, they showed such incredible resilience and such ability to still love life that it really, I think at that time, really inspired me to throw myself wholeheartedly into pursuing the study of psychology, to understand better how people become resilient, how we can promote people's resilience. So I embarked on that path and found myself very happily at Hunter College and the City University of New York studying anxiety and emotion regulation, which is our ability to become aware of our emotions, to change our emotions when we wish, to be emotionally flexible. And of course, emotion regulation is one of our key abilities in life to be successful, our ability to cope with challenges when we face challenges, both things that make us happy, sad, any sorts of emotions. And so as I was studying emotional well-being, emotional psychopathology, such as anxiety and depression, I started to realize all of the tremendous barriers that are placed in really our society and in the mental health system in terms of people being able to access these excellent, empirically validated, cutting-edge treatments that scientists and clinicians have developed over many decades. These are some excellent approaches, especially for the treatment of anxiety and depression and the mood disorders. But yet, these treatments are highly expensive. They're very time-consuming. They're difficult to obtain in many communities. And in addition, I think one of the biggest barriers that we don't talk about very much is the fact that mental illness is still one of the most severely stigmatized of the conditions, of the medical conditions that you could have. So if you Google stigma definition, literally what comes up is a nice little definition. And then the example of stigma is the stigma of mental illness. So it's literally, one of the most prevalent examples of people being stigmatized. So in a lot of the treatments we're developing for people and that are out there, despite our best intentions, they tend to make people feel that they're broken, that they're ill, that they're sort of broken in a way that diabetes doesn't make you feel, that having asthma doesn't make you feel quite this broken. There's something about mental illness and the way that we think about it and talk about it in our society that really makes us feel that, if we're put in that box, if we're diagnosed and labeled with a mental illness, that somehow there's something really wrong with us. And so in my work, in my research, as I was studying anxiety and the brain and different kinds of treatments, I started to realize that we needed to do a better job as a field in terms of making treatments not only more accessible to people, but also less stigmatizing, to shift the dialogue away from people who have mental illness or struggle with mental health issues. We shift away from the notion of them being broken or something really wrong with them to the idea that this is an obstacle like any other obstacle. And I felt in my work and in my you know, talking with other professionals, that one of the most promising avenues to actually start to destigmatize mental illness was to produce more e-health and mobile health tools. And that maybe not isn't at face value obvious immediately, but one thing that's pretty apparent about our mobile devices and our technology is that we feel very close to it. You know, all of us, we're walking down the street and 90% of people have their devices clutched in their hand. We use them as sort of a hub that connects us to our loved ones, to the world. And this hub, our mobile devices, are so laden with positive feelings because they're so incredibly important in our lives, that the idea is if we start to provide mental health interventions and allow people to self-curate their mental wellness through their mobile devices and through mobile and internet-based technologies, that we could actually sort of shift how people feel about the very nature of mental illness and how to improve. So that's been one of the main paths that has led me from my lab-based research on the anxious brain to mobile mental health.
Tracy, you mentioned some interesting aspects of your work and how it ties into people addressing issues of anxieties and challenges in life. And in particular, you talked about being able to overcome challenges and the anxiety that's around that and how that ties into success. That's an issue that we hear about from our audience, which typically are leaders and entrepreneurs, who often are charting paths where they feel very alone. I wondered if you could talk about this a little bit.
Right. I mean, I think anxiety is something that's in the common language now. We talk about being anxious, about being stressed, about being worried. These are common problems. However, the commonness of that, those terms really belie the incredible barrier that anxiety can create for people. One thing that we also often forget is that really anxiety and the stress related disorders and just even problems are so pervasive. We know that in any given time in the United States alone, we have over 30 million people who are diagnosed with a clinical anxiety disorder. And then in our lifetime, over 90 million of us, that's a third of the U.S. population, will become clinically anxious. So, you know, what you're speaking about is is often not only the normal anxiety that an entrepreneur would feel when faced with really significant challenges and having to overcome a lot of obstacles, but underneath that is the fact that anxiety is a pervasive societal problem. So we live in an anxious society. I mean, really the statistics speak to that. So when you're an entrepreneur and when you're facing the great challenge, both the joy and the trials and the tribulations of creating a business, you know, you have to contend with the fact that we live in an anxious society. One thing that I've been very interested in is how to better think of anxiety and stress, both normal, like that all of us experience, which is almost all of us, I would argue, as well as clinical, but how anxiety and stress are really problems with habits of thought. That really one of the things that drives a lot of anxiety is anxiety and stress is how we choose to think about the world and the challenges that we're facing. So in my research and in Personal Zen, the app that I developed, we're capitalizing on some really exciting emerging cognitive technology that's coming out of the field of psychology and neuroscience that demonstrates ways in which habitual ways of thinking are the engines that drive anxiety and stress. One of these big habits of thought that my research and many others focuses on is what's called the threat bias. And I think this is very relevant to an entrepreneurial context because you're building a business, there's a lot that could threaten your success, and it's very easy to start to focus on potential threats that you're facing. And this threat bias is the tendency, the habit, to look for negative information, to look for threats, to look for opportunities for failure, even when they don't exist. So it's this sort of vigilance, this sort of general negative way of looking for information and interpreting information in your experience, your day-to-day experience. And what happens in anxiety, regular anxiety or even clinical anxiety, is that you start to focus too much on the negative. It's not adaptive anymore. It's not just you paying attention to what could go wrong. You're getting stuck on it. And what starts to happen is it creates a vicious cycle. So you're looking for negative information. You get really stuck on it. You're ruminating on it. And it starts to make you feel more stressed and anxious. And that emotional state, because thoughts and feelings work together, drives more of this threat focus. So you start to find even more negative information in your environment. And then you start to lose opportunities to find positive information, to find opportunities for success instead of failure. And then you become more anxious, and you can see how this vicious cycle can just turn on and on. And so what we've done with Personal Zen, and what other some cutting edge research coming out of the lab right now is showing, is that you can very simply and effectively retrain how people pay attention to negative information to increase their flexibility, to help them stop getting stuck on the negative and start to be able to scan more for positive information and opportunities for success in their environment. And so you're basically creating a new habit. So now anxiety isn't so much you're broken, you're labeled with this either diagnosis or this box of, oh, I'm an anxious person. Now rather, this is a habit that I want to change. It's like, wow, this is my New Year's resolution. I want to change these old bad habits and I want to create new ones. So now with these sorts of cognitive retraining technologies, we can really also, I think, move towards destigmatizing the nature of things like anxiety.
Hmm. Are there some simple tips that listeners can follow that will help them avoid getting stuck dwelling on what can go wrong and take action that will lead to positive results?
Sure. I mean, there's so much out there, and it's a lot of it is, you know, sort of becoming more and more part of the common dialogue. But there are a couple things that I like to focus on. One is, I mean, this is plugging my app, but you can download Personal Zen for free from the App Store. And what that actually does is it retrains your attention to disengage from the negative and focus on more positive information. But you don't need an app to do that. One thing that has been shown to actually help reduce sort of ruminating on negative things that you experience during the day is a simple sort of day in review that you can do at the end of every day. I actually do this with my children every day at the end of the day. We simply talk about three interesting, exciting, wonderful, whatever adjective you like, things that happened in their day. And we talk about what happened, why it happened, who it happened to. We just elaborate on it a little bit. And what this actually does is it allows you to sift through a whole lot of information over the course of this whole day you experienced and pick out the positive. And you elaborate on it, so you create more complex mental structures around these positive things that happened. And if you do that day after day, it becomes a habit of mind. It becomes a habit of how you think about your day. You always pick out the positive from something that has happened to you. So that's a simple technique. You know, other techniques are simply being aware that you might have this tendency to focus on negative information. And so you could play a game with yourself during the day that in a given situation that's very stressful, you can sort of take a step back and say, in this situation, I could focus on these three negative things, but let me pick out three positive things that I could take away from this situation in the moment. And again, if you do that, situation after situation, challenge after challenge, it becomes a habit.
That's a great example. Tracy, can you tell us a little bit about how Personal Zen is going? And by the way, I've downloaded it and tried it, and it's a very exciting app.
Oh, thanks. It's actually it's very exciting for me because, you know, I'm a trained, tried and true academic. And so this is really my foray into the entrepreneurial world. And Personal Zen is still really a research product. I developed it for use in the lab. I developed it for use in, you know, people in our studies, you know, using it in the real world. But because it got some really strong research support, I just wanted to make it available to everyone free on the App Store. But, you know, it's been a very interesting journey for me because as I, you know, came from doing very lab-based, basic neuroscience research, creating this app, in that context, I started to realize that if I really was serious about my mission to reduce barriers to mental health treatment, and if I really wanted the tools that we as a field developed to be research-based, then I needed to do it. You know, you can't really wait around for other people to decide to, you know, have a lot of, you know, have a sense of responsibility and say, I'm going to create stress reduction tools that actually have science behind them. Because honestly, David, there are a million stress reduction apps out there, and I can tell you zero have actually had research studies behind them showing that that particular app in real people's lives actually reduces stress. So there's a lot of snake oil out there and a lot of snake oil salesmen and saleswomen, frankly. And so as I was doing this research, I thought, well, if I'm really going to create excellent gamified mental health tools, I need to do it myself and I need to become entrepreneurial because that's the way to build a team, to get resources, and to actually get those tools out there. So at this stage, we're actually at a very exciting stage. I've completed a few research studies. We've gotten some pretty substantial media attention about the studies with no PR, I have to tell you. It was a bit of a shock because we really didn't do much of anything, but people got very excited about the possibility that a stress reduction and anxiety reduction app really had science behind it. And so it's been getting out there. We have, I think, with zero pushing of it, I think we have about 70, 80,000 downloads from the App Store, which is respectable. We were named by CNN as the number 3 top health app recently. So, you know, I knew that this was, you know, we were onto something and that people really were thirsting for this and there was excitement about it. So I'm right now in the middle of building an executive team to actually start creating products that take the basic game mechanic of Personal Zen that we have some good research support on and embedding it in a range of other games as a start. We also want to improve upon Personal Zen because, as I said, thank you for your compliment about it. It is a beta version, though, in the sense that it was developed for research purposes. We know we want to improve, a lot of the aspects of the game, the tutorial, the stickiness of the game, really. So we're going to be actively working on that. And so we're putting our product development team together and we're going to really start using science to fuel the development of more of these apps and tools.
Sounds very exciting. Tracy, what have been some of the unexpected challenges around developing and releasing Personal Zen?
I think some of the unexpected challenges were my own mental blocks, frankly, because as an academic, we're very much socialized to consider anything entrepreneurial, anything with dollar signs associated with it as a conflict of interest that actually, I don't want to say it means you're a sellout, but there is an ethos to, you know, academics don't really do anything in the world of money. We just create knowledge. And, you know, that model is great as far as it goes. But I think when it comes to actually creating something that can reach people and that is of high enough quality to be consumer ready, I need to be partnering with people who are experts in, you know, mobile technology and entrepreneurship. And that's something that I came to see was necessary. And that was actually my own value judgments about what it means to be an entrepreneur. I had to overcome those and try to figure out a way to become an entrepreneur that still has, that for me still has the same value, the values and integrity of what I do in my research in the entrepreneurial context. So for example, there will always be a free version of personal Zen in any products we develop. I never want to create a product where there are barriers to people accessing good, scientifically sound interventions. You know, that's one. You know, there's also a way to acknowledge that a lot of this research is emerging out of, you know, research that others have done and partnerships that I have with other colleagues. For example, I'm collaborating with researchers who are interested in cognitive biases and addiction and in other areas. So we know that people who are maybe have alcohol problems, drug problems, even eating disorders, there are certain habits of thought that can drive those problems as well. So as I collaborate with people who are squarely focused on those issues, we can take those ideas and embed them in a game, but I'm much more excited about trying to create a company that can collaborate with scientists and create a forum for them to also create wonderful tools that can help people. So I think those are some of the challenges and obstacles I face to find my way in this new environment, and keeping my values as an academic and moving into this new exciting world.
Fascinating. Tracy, it sounds like you've had some interesting shifts in the kind of work that you've done over the course of your life. How would you characterize some of your biggest successes?
I think my successes in my own mind have been being able to push myself beyond the person that I assumed I was. So, you know, the first real shift I think happened when I went from being a classical musician to a psychologist. And that was a tough shift because my total identity had been wrapped up in being a musician. You know, I'd studied since I was 8 or 9 years old. I went to music camp every summer, orchestra camp. You know, that was my vision of who I was. And then when I was a sophomore at conservatory and realized that I'd fallen in love with psychology and with these resilient kids and the whole notion of resilience and growth. And when I realized that that was what got me up in the morning, for me, the success was able to leave behind my view of who I was and to create a new path. That was one important success for me. And when I started studying psychology, I also assumed that I wanted to be a clinician. And indeed, I did get a clinical psychology degree, but I never ended up practicing as a psychologist, having a private practice, because I realized how inspired I was by research. And, you know, I'd had an arts education all my life. I'd studied music. I'd gone to a school of the arts high school in Rochester, New York. I went on to conservatory. So I'd been an artist all my life, and I realized that in the process of doing research, I was funneling my creative energy into this new context. But to let go of the idea that, you know, what I needed to be was a clinician, to be able to make that shift and to have that flexibility, for me, that was a big success because I was following my passion, and I didn't let old, calcified views of myself stop me from making that shift towards what made me happy.
And what was it that helped you realize that you might have been pigeonholing yourself by particular views of who you are?
I have no idea. You know, I have no idea. I should know that, right? I'm a psychologist. I think one thing, and this actually does play into a bit of what I also study in my research. And, you know, they always say research me search, right? I think that part of it was that I'm a very, what you might call an approach-oriented person. There's lots of psychological dichotomies out there, and none are really true because no one's black and white. But this particular dichotomy is the difference between being a relatively approach-oriented person, that you approach positive, you work towards these positive goals, versus being more of an avoidant person, where you work towards goals, but you do that in order to avoid negative outcomes. So it's the difference between studying to get an A and to do well and learn something versus studying to avoid getting an F. It's a subtle distinction, but it's very profound because what an approach orientation does is it orients you in the world to things that are positive, bring happiness, are opportunities for growth. It's more of a growth orientation. And I think whether this is my temperament or I was socialized and it was probably all of the above, you know, whatever combination of experiences I'd had, I think has pushed me towards being a sort of approach-oriented person. And I follow that. I follow the joy. And I think, and actually, ironically, that's actually what a lot of these cognitive retraining techniques are about in personal Zen. It's you disengage from the negative and you follow the positive, follow the joy.
You know, Scott Messer, who is one of the guests on Smashing the Plateau, who works in the area of sales, talks about this with regard to thinking on the expense side versus thinking on the revenue side. And he says, if you think on the expense side, you're limiting yourself. But if you think on the revenue side, you focus on revenues, then you're looking at your business from a perspective of abundance, and it's much more likely to grow as a result.
That's a beautiful application of that. Yes, absolutely. And that's right. The abundance, that abundance focus is a great way of terming it.
So, Tracy, who in your life has helped you smash the plateau and help you overcome roadblocks?
Well, I think one of the most important people in my life who's helped me do that is my husband, Vivek Tiwari. He's a writer-producer in the entertainment industry and a real visionary, a guy who really follows his heart at every turn. And I think in everything I've attempted to do, he's really supported me in following my heart and keep that abundance and promotion focus going. I also think, you know, there of course have been so many important people in my life. But one thing I think has been very important is the fact that I love to collaborate. And I've been very lucky, both in research and in other endeavors, I've been very lucky with seeking out and finding excellent people who like to be a part of a team. I've never really been one who needs to do it all on my own and to be the one. And, you know, I much prefer to work in a collaborative context. And as a scientist, I've been trained to appreciate that because science does not happen in a vacuum. Science happens in teams and you stand on the shoulder of giants and that's how we move forward. So I think that being able to both embrace on my own and also be in a field that promotes my embracing of teamwork, I think has been one of the most important factors in helping me smash the plateau. Mm-hmm.
You know, collaboration is also very important in business because no one does business alone.
Right.
Even people who are solo practitioners still have a team generally of people who are part of their, who help them in their business. What are some tips that people might take away that will help them understand how you can feel successful as an individual while you're collaborating in a team environment?
For me, I think it's all about fit between you and your partner or among teammates. So you all have to bring something both overlapping but unique to the table. And I think that's much harder to find than one might expect. So, and it's not that you have to be the only person who does X and, you know, and then team member, you know, Jane Schmo can only do Y, but rather I think it's having the instinct, I think it comes down to instinct in many cases, or perhaps the insight to understand where your weaknesses are and accept those weaknesses and find people that, you know, can really complement you. And then when you are successful in doing that and building team in that way, I think you feel real ownership over your expertise while being flexible enough to appreciate other people's expertise and really valuing and appreciating that. And of course, you know, when you have a team in which people value each other and value themselves, I think that it's much easier to feel that you have your own accomplishment.
Tracy, please tell listeners how they can learn more about you and your work.
Well, you could go to my website at Hunter College. So I can give you the long, unwieldy website, but if you just Google Tracy Dennis and Hunter College, it'll take you right to my lab website. And you can also check out my blog on WordPress. It's called Psyche's Circuitry, psyche like, you know, psychology, and circuitry. And it's really about growing up and growing old in the digital age. And I wrestle with a lot of ideas about the role of technology in our life, for better or for worse. So if you're interested in my less formal, a little less academic-y thoughts, you could also check out the blog.
Great. Tracy, thank you so much for taking the time to join us today on Smashing the Plateau. My guest today has been Tracy Dennis, who is the creator of Personal Zen and also professor of psychology and neuroscience at Hunter College and the City University of New York. Thank you again, Tracy, for joining us.
Thank you, David. It was a real pleasure.
You've been listening to Smashing the Plateau, the podcast produced by 10 Strategic Partners. Be sure to visit our website at smashingtheplateau.com and join our email list to hear many more great interviews like this one. And if you like what you heard, please leave us a review on iTunes by going to smashingtheplateau.com/iTunes. I'm your host, David Schreiner-Kahn, and we'll be talking again soon.